All right, good morning, everybody. We're going to follow up with another topic that was closely related to the previous topic that we discussed, namely the Kiddusha of Sukkah and the Isser of Atzi Sukkah, the Isser Hana'ah, the prohibition to derive benefit from parts of the Sukkah. So we're going to follow up with that tonight by discussing the relationship between the two mitzvahs that we have throughout the 7 days of Sukkah and Lulav. So to begin with, let's just prove why that's a compelling topic. We're going to try to illustrate a number of instances or examples in which Sukkah and Lulav seem to overlap. And the overarching question is going to be how to understand that intersection. Why would it be that Sukkah and Lulav should be mixed or should be interconnected? So the first one is to consider where exactly one, or when and where, one should fulfill his mitzvah of Netilas Lulav. So we start off with the Shulchan Aruch, Simin Taf Reish Nun Beis, Seif Aleph. Mitzvahs Lulav B'yom V'lo B'layla V'chol Ayom Kashim L'Netilas Lulav. Shem Lo Natoshachi Sotanu Acharkin. Shulchan Aruch says you take it during the day, and you could use all day to do it. Try to be zrizin in mitzvot, so therefore you should take it in the morning. Shulchan Aruch says that the ikar hamitzvah is to do netilas lulav during halel. If you have to get up early, then note lo mishal amar shachar. You can even do amar shachar. The Rama comments v'medakti ikiachus halulav biyado kishenichnas mibeis leveis haknesses. One who's a medakti pimitzol should hold his lulav while from when he comes back from shul and enters. When he leaves his house and goes to shul. Gambish as hatfila, and he should also hold his lulav during tfila. V'chein yachzir leveso, and then he should also hold it when he comes back to his house. K'de l'chabev hamitzvos. Okay, so the Magen Avraham comments on the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah in Gambish as hatfila that one should hold his lulav during shas hatfila. The Magen Avraham comments the chiva de lekichaso mitzvah lo mitred bay. Generally, in tfila, we have a principle: you're not supposed to hold objects while you're in, while you're being omi lifnei abore, while you are davening shmona esrei, you're not supposed to hold other objects because we're concerned that they are going to distract you from your amida. But says the Magen Avraham that since holding the lulav is a mitzvah, so therefore we don't have that concern. Here's where it comes. This is the ikar for us. The shalah is of the opinion that one, says the Magen Avraham, that one should shake his lulav in the sukkah before going to shul. So even though the Shulchan Aruch says that the ikar mitzvah b'sh'as ha-halel, which is probably what... Does anybody have the practice to shake his lulav in the sukkah before he goes to shul in the morning? Anybody? No. Okay, so all of us have the practice to make the bracha of anatilas lulav and shake the lulav for the first time when we recite halal in the morning after shacharis. But the Magen Avraham comments from the Shalah that there's a different practice to shake the lulav first in the sukkah before going off to shul. The Mishnah Brura adds, "Mishas Hahalal kedei lenaneh behoda ve'oshiyana," that the reason why you want to take it during halal is so that you can combine it with the na'anuim. Uktzas mena mahadrim, some of the mahadrim, meaning those who are mahadrim, the mitzvos, they're people who really try to keep all of the different aspects of the mitzvos. So noagim levarich ala lulav be'anitza chama besocha sukkah ulena'anea ve'achar kach b'sha'as ha'halal mena'anim od. There are those who have the practice to shake the lulav right away in the morning in the sukkah and to do the na'anuim, and then afterwards b'sha'as ha'halal to shake it even more. The Shalah really comments from the Sefer Seder Hayom. This is in source number 4. He quotes from the Seder Hayom that some have the practice to take the lulav in the sukkah in the morning and others have the practice to wait until halal. The Shalah says that he tries to do both, meaning that he goes to shul, he daven shacharis, then he goes into his sukkah, shakes the lulav, and then continues davening. And he also says, "Matzasi b'chisvei kodesh shel tamidei ha'arizal." He quotes from the Ari that in netilas lulav Yosef told levarich tchila kodem atfila b'yoscha b'veischa b'sukkah atzma, that it's better to to take the lulav right away in the morning before tefillah in the sukkah, and you do the rest of the shaking and the walking around, you do that in shul. Sof kol sof, acharei kichlos hakol, what comes out of this discussion? That there are different opinions as to when exactly is the best time to shake the lulav, whether that be for during Shas HaHalo, the way that many, and including all of us, do it, or whether, as the Mahadre HaMitzvos quoted in the Mishnah Brura, and an opinion in the Seder Hayom followed up in the Shla, whether you should take the lulav dafka in the sukkah even before tefillah. Halach lamais, I saw in the Igros Moshe that he says that since we're not nohig nowadays to hold the lulav all day, so we're also not nohig to take the lulav in the sukkah before shachris. I think some people still do have that practice, but as we see tonight, most of us don't. But for our purposes, for the conceptual question, this becomes a clear case. A clear piece of evidence where you have the intersection between the two mitzvos that dominate this 7-day period, where you have the integration of sukkah and lulav. And the question really is just Omer Darsheni, it's why? Why is it that lulav should dafka be taken in the sukkah? Okay, in Achinami there are two mitzvos during this time period, but that it doesn't... You know, it's not necessarily the case, and whenever we have two mitzvos that overlap in time, that they are related to one another, or that even if they are related, that they have to intersect in this way where you try to combine both. So why is it that the lulav should dafka be taken in the sukkah? That's example number one, ad kan. Example number two. Let's move to the material that is used for the schach in the sukkah. So the Mishnah in Sukkah at Aleph and Aleph says, "Zeh klal kol shemekabel tumah ve'ingidulam in aretz misachachin bo v'chol davar she'ino mekabel tumah ve'ingidulam in aretz misachachin bo." The Mishnah says that there's a klal that the schach has to be gidulo min ha'aretz, and it cannot be mekabel tumah. The Gemara wants to know from where we derive that. It quotes a number of different sources offered by the Amoraim, and finally the Gemara sums up with the opinion of Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda Amar Mehacha, he quotes a pasuk from Nehemiah, which is on the source sheet in source number 7. Tzu hahar vehaviu alizayis va'ale eat shemen va'ale hadas va'ale simarim va'ale eat avos la'asos sukos kakasuf. So, a Klal Yisrael is told to bring olive branches and hadas, myrtle branches, and alei tamarim, fig branches, va'alei eitz avos, braided branches, la'aso sukos kakosuf, in order to make a sukkah. So Rav Chisda derives from this pasuk that clearly you're supposed to use something that is gidulo min ha'aretz for schach. Because we're basically, Klal Yisrael was told to bring all these different types of branches to use for their schach. Branches are gidulo min ha'aretz. It comes from trees. So clearly, this is a good raya that the schach is supposed to be gidulo amin ha'aretz. So, but what's interesting, and the mefarshim and the malbim in particular point this out, is that if you look at the types of branches that Klal Yisrael are told to take, so they're familiar to us, right? Why are they familiar to us? Anybody notice this? What about them is familiar, or at least about some of them? Yeah, right? Ale timarim, ale eitz avos. The pasuk in Emor says, ulkachtem lachem bayom arishon, pri eitz hadar, that's esrog, kapos timarim, that's the lulav, just like it says in this pasuk, ale timarim, right? Kapos timarim. Ulkachtem lachem bayom arishon, pri eitz hadar, kapos timarim, va'anaf eitz avos. Right here it says, va'ale eitz avos. And then the pasuk ends off ve'arvi nachal. So here we have two of the dalet minim that are being used for the material of the schach. And in fact, we actually have an opinion in the Tanaim later on in Maseches Sukkah that requires that the sukkah be made from the dalet minim. The Gemara says, "Va'amar Rav, mino amina la de siv ikar de dikla mina de lulvahu." How do I know that siv is like a type of branch that surrounds the tree? Ikar de dikla is the trunk. How do I know that? Sorry, I lost my place for a second. How do I know that that is good for a lulav? So the sign of Asukos Teishvu Sukkah Shal Kol Davar Divrei Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ain Sukkah No Hegas El Abdala Minim Shabbat Lulav. The Gemara goes on to prove that if that's the case, any kar de dikla and save are mina de lulva. But for our purposes, what you see is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ain Sukkah No Hegas El Abdala Minim Shabbat Lulav. You have to use the dalin minim in order to make your schach, says Rabbi Yehuda. Now, we don't paskin like that, but that's fascinating. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to use the dalin minim in order to make your schach. So again, this is another example where lulav and sukkah overlap, where they intersect. And again, it's Omer Darshini. Just what exactly is going on? Why would it be that lulav and sukkah intersect in this type of way? Good so far? So we have two examples. Yeah, the first one is the shas netila, and the second one is the material that's used for the schach. I want to bring up one other one. There could be more. I'm not saying that this is an exhaustive list, but we're at least pointing out three. And the third one is very much related to what we discussed on Monday night. So we know from Monday night that there is an Isser of Atzei Sukkah. Okay, so someone review for us, what's the Isser of Atzei Sukkah? What does that mean? Brian? Awesome. Okay, so Atzei Sukkah is basically the Isser Hana'ah that applies to either the Schach or maybe also the Defanos of the Sukkah. And we quoted, I think, on Monday night, we did quote on Monday night, that there's a machlokas as to whether this Isser should be limited to that this principle of Kishem Shachol Shem Shamayim Ala Chagiga, Kach Chol Shem Shamayim Ala Sukkah, the same way that a Chagiga is Kadosh, so too a Sukkah is Kadosh. Is that a general principle that applies to all mitzvos, or is that specifically applied to sukkah? And we quoted a Rashi, Daf Lamed Zayin Amid Beis, that applies that concept to the hadasim. That's source number 9 on today's source sheet. Aser lahariach bo de gamrinon mi sukkah. We derive from sukkah the alfino beperek kam and aftes the chol shem shamayim al atzei sukkah lay aser be'anah kol sheva ho v'huktza l'mitzvah. So the reason why, says Rashi, that it's prohibited to smell a hadas for one's personal pleasure, for one's private enjoyment, the reason why that is prohibited is because of the extension of the principle of Chol Shem Shamayim Ala Sukkah. We extend that to Hadassim. Now that is a fascinating extension, as again we commented on Monday night, because the Gemara Daf Tes seems to be Sukkah centric. Right, we're saying Chagas Sukkos Shivas Yamim LaHashem. So it's interesting that Rashi feels the comfort level, so you know, or the willingness, yeah, doesn't have hesitation to extend the Isser of Atzei Sukkah to the Hadassim. And we pointed out as well on Monday night that according to the Avni Nezer, this is not only about Hadassim or Sukkah, it's for all Cheftei Mitzvah. Whenever you have a Chefetz that's used for a Mitzvah, so says Avni Nezer, based on this Rashi, that if it's hooked to the Mitzvah, so then there would be an Isser Hanah. What I wanted to note tonight is that maybe you can make the argument that Rashi here, when he extends it to the Hadassim, maybe he has in mind to extend it dafka to the Dalet Minim and not to all mitzvos. And in fact, I think there might be a diuk from the Prima Gadim that suggests that way. If you look at the raid, they quote the Prima Gadim as saying that just like the Avni Nezer. But the Prima Gadim doesn't say that. The Prima Gadim says that according to this Rashi, so we would extend the Isser Hana'ah to Hadassim and to Esrogin. But he doesn't say that we would extend it to all mitzvos. So I was wondering, maybe according to this Prima Gaudim, the idea in Rashi is that, yes, it's a chiddush that will extend the chalos shem shamayim that's chol al sukkah to another mitzvah. That is a chiddush. But maybe according to Rashi, we would extend it only to the dalet minim, and we wouldn't extend it beyond that. And if that's the case, so then that would emerge as a third example in which we have sukkah and lulav sharing a din, in which there is some commonality, some overlapping intersection between a dalet minim and lulav. Again, that according to Rashi, if this is correct, according to Rashi, that the chalos shem shamayim that applies to sukkah would apply specifically to sukkah and to the dalet minim and not to other mitzvos. So, ad kan for our examples of the connection between sukkah and lulav. We have the shas netila and the makom netila. We have the min haschach, what is the schach made out of, and the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that it has to be made out of the dalet minim. And we also finally have the isur hana'ah and the possibility that according to Rashi, the chalos shem shamayim that applies to sukkah would apply specifically to sukkah and to dalet minim, but not to other mitzvos. So, chaver, the question is to try to explain further, try to illuminate what exactly is this connection between sukkah and lulav. Why are we going out of our way to connect these two mitzvos during this time period of Chagasukos? So in order to do that, we have to have a better understanding of what each mitzvah is all about. So we have to analyze each mitzvah independently, and then we could hopefully come to understand why we would want to connect the two. We did some analysis of the mitzvah of sukkah on Monday night, so we'll save that for a little bit of a review at the end of tonight's shiur before we wrap it all up. For the time being, let's focus on lulav, which we haven't yet discussed. So, I guess just as like an introduction, I'm going to try to, a lot of this is based on Divrei Torah that I've heard from Mordechai Rabbi of Rosenzweig. I haven't heard him make the specific connection of sukkah and lulav in terms of these makoros, but that's not to say he hasn't said it or that he doesn't have a different understanding. I just haven't heard about it. But I have a lot of what we're going to say is based on Torahs that I've heard from him. So, the basic gist, the basic argument that I'm going to try to make is that sukkah and lulav share a common denominator in that they both have mikdash elements to them. And that's something that we already described about sukkah on Monday night in terms of its being a ke'in mikdash, and we'll try to get back to that. But first, let's illustrate that with respect to lulav, okay? There are a number of sources that indicate that lulav is meant to be treated almost ke'in like a korban. Okay? Like a korban. How do we know that? So the Gemara darshins the pasuk that we say in Halal every day of Sukkis, Isu chag ba'avosim ad karnos hamizbeach. You should tie together the chag with avosim and bring it to karnos hamizbeach. What does that mean? So Amar Abavahu, Amar Abalazar, source number 11, Kol hanotel lulav be'agudo. So it's darshaning from the word isru, that you tie it together. So eged, the eged of the lulav, agudo, is the tie of the lulav, the thing that binds the lulav together. So kol hanotel lulav be'agudo ve'hadas ba'avoso, and he takes braided hadasim. Male alav akosov, the pasuk considers him ki ilu bana mizbeach ve'hikrev alav korban. It says, if he has built an altar and sacrificed a korban upon it. So here we are comparing the kiyum mitzvah of netilas lulav and the dalet minim, specifically lulav and hadas, to being bone amizbeach and being makriv a korban. The Marasha explains that a little bit more in source number 12. Dahainu asiyas lulav be'aguda. When you wrap your dalet minim together, when you bind them all together, so then that is like binias mizbeach. That's like creating, that's like building an altar. Unitilason, when you take it and you fulfill the mitzvah, he mitzvah ki ilu hikriv korban. That's as if you sacrifice the korban. When you in the morning shake your lulav, when you fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and you say anitilas lulav, it's as if you were being makriv a korban. Wow. Now, it's not only this explicit drasha that compares lulav to korban, but it's also some of the dinim of lulav that show that lulav is treated like a type of korban. So let's bring the following example. This is refrigerator material. Everybody needs to know this example. Okay? There's a Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Aleph Amed Aleph. Tanu Rabban on the Braisa says, Sukkah Gizula. Let's say you have a stolen Sukkah, Vamesakech Birshus Harabim, or if you put up a Sukkah in Rishus Harabim, for now let's focus on Sukkah Gizula, Rabbi Eliezer Posel, Vachachomim Machshirin. There's a Machlokas Tanoim whether that Sukkah is possible or kosher. The Chachomim are of the opinion that it's kosher. The Rishonim want to know, they ask a simple question, Chevra, a simple question. All right? Whatever happened to the principle of mitzvah haba'a be'avera? The Gemara in Sukkah discusses that a lulav hagazel, a stolen lulav, is disqualified from the mitzvah of lulav. Why? Because mitzvah haba'a be'avera hi. Because if you steal a lulav, then you are fulfilling a mitzvah, dahainu, the mitzvah of lulav, but only by the means of an avera, of gezela, of stealing the lulav. So since stealing the lulav is what brought about the mitzvah, that disqualifies the mitzvah. Well, my friends, if that's the case, then why is Sukkah Gezula treated differently from lulav agazel? Mitzvah abab avera disqualifies lulav agazel, but not Sukkah Gezula? That's the question of the Rishonim. Take a look at the Ritva, source number 14, Vehikshu Betosfos. The Ritva quotes some of the Baliat Tosfos. Let's say it's a case where someone else has a sukkah and you mamish, you take him out of the sukkah and sit in his sukkah, you steal it. So isn't that mitzvah baba avera? Vitirtzu, they explained, they resolved. Delo amrin on mitzvah hababa avera, ela bedavar shehuba liratzos. We apply the principle of mitzvah hababa avera only to mitzvos that are ba'im liratzos. What does liratzos mean? Anybody know? Ritzui? Ratzon?
Well.
Okay, similar. So usually this term is used a lot in the realm of Kodshim. When you do Shnai Mikra and Sefer Vayikra in this upcoming year, pay attention to it. So ritzui is appeasement. It's meant to bring favorability. It's meant to find acceptance, kaviyachol, in the eyes of the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay? So if you have a mitzvah that is meant to appease Hashem, it's meant to find favor in His eyes, so then that's the type of mitzvah to which we apply the principle of mitzvah hababa avera. What are some examples of those mitzvos? Say, the Baalei Hatosos quoted in the Ritva, kigon, korban. That's the paradigmatic ritzui. A korban is bal ratzos. It comes to appease Hashem. Then shofar, which is fascinating in its own right, that shofar is a mitzvah that is meant to engender a sense of ritzui. And then what's another one? The lulav, the chayotze bohem, and lulav and others like it. Aval besukkah, shein bar ritzui. But when it comes to the mitzvah of sukkah that lacks this component of ritzui, lekom yishum mitzvah hababa avira. So then, you don't have any problem of mitzvah hababa avira. And that answers our question. Why do we apply mitzvah hababa avira to lulav but not to sukkah? Because lulav is a type of mitzvah that is balaratzos. It's meant to find favorability. It's meant to bring favor in the eyes of Hashem. Whereas sukkah doesn't necessarily have that quality. So therefore, we distinguish lulav from sukkah with respect to mitzvah hababa avira. What do we want to pull out of this? Very significant makor on a lot of levels. But what we want to pull out for our purposes is that clearly lulav is being treated like what? Like what, Chevra? Just like we saw in the previous Gemara. What's a lulav being treated like? A korban, Brian. Beautiful. A korban, Ethan. Exactly. Lulav is being treated like a korban in the common, with respect to the common denominator of ritzui. And that's why mitzvah baba avira applies to it. So this is another example where lulav is treated like a korban. Yes, Brian. Brian. Yeah. No, that's a great question. So this is an example where the Rishonim have a global understanding of a mitzvah based on all of the halachos that they know about the mitzvah, and that they are convinced that the nature of the mitzvah is related to ritzui. There's no pasuk that says that a lulav is balaratzos. No such pasuk. There is, I will see very soon, that there is a pasuk that can be interpreted as referring to either a korban or to lulav. That, I think, is also significant. But there is no explicit verse that says that the lulav is balaratzos. These rishonim are based on the dinim that they know about shofar, about lulav, are concluding that they should be treated like a korban in terms of their ritzui element. Okay? Alright, so what do we have in terms of the connection between lulav and the mikdash? So we have lulav being treated like a korban in terms of the drash of Isu Chag Bavost and Markanos Mizbeach, and in terms of the application of mitzvah Hababa Avera to lulav based on the ritzoi that lulav engenders. In addition to that, we have a fascinating extension, or I shouldn't really call it an extension, but lulav is actually a two-pronged mitzvah. Lulav takes place in two distinct locations and for different time periods. What do I mean by that? So I'm referring, of course, to the distinction between the mikdash and what's called gevulin. The mitzvah of lulav in the Beis HaMikdash and the mitzvah of lulav outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what's called gevulin or medina. So these are really two prongs of one mitzvah. Where do these come from? So let's begin from the pasuk. So from there we derive that on the first day of Sukkot, everyone is obligated to take a lulav no matter where you live. I don't care if you're in the Mikdash, if you're in Yerushalayim, if you're in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, or whether you're in America. I don't care where you are. You're obligated to take a lulav on the first day of Sukkot. Then the pasuk concludes, Usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shevas yomim, and you should rejoice before Hashem for 7 days. It's a very ambiguous conclusion to the pasuk. What exactly are we talking about? What's the simcha that you're supposed to do before Hashem for 7 days? And of course, we know that the phrase lefnei Hashem Elokeichem almost always in the Torah refers to what? Refers to, if it's being used in terms of a location, it refers to the Beis HaMikdash. So what are we talking about here? So the Mishnah in Sukkah Mem Aleph Mem Aleph says, Barishona hayulav nito b'mikdash shiva uvimedina yom echad. So clearly the Mishnah here derived from this pasuk based on Chazal HaMisora that usmachtam lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim refers to the mitzvah of lulav. That lulav applies bigvulin everywhere in the world for 1 day, namely the first day of Sukkot, but in the mikdash it applies for how many days? For 7 days. Then, Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Mishnah concludes, Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Shei Lulav Nitol B'Medina Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. So what we do nowadays by taking lulav every single day of Sukkot is actually a mitzvah derabbanon. It's a Zeichel HaMikdash. Midde Oraisa, when are we obligated to take lulav in Englewood or Teaneck or Maryland or wherever we are? Where are we obligated to take lulav? What day, Moshe? Only the first. The mitzvah de orais is on the first day. Mitzvah de rabbanon is on days 2 through 7. What's the basis for the mitzvah de rabbanon? It's a zecher de mikdash. Because there is a mitzvah de oraisa to take the lulav for all 7 days, but specifically in the makom hamikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash. The Yerushalmi makes this even, darshins this even more clearly from the pasuk in source number 17, where the Yerushalmi says, "Ksevu smachtam lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim." Yeah, Moshe, I'll get to you in a second. Okay. Ksevu smachtam lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim is tanye tani b'simchas lulav akasu medaber. There are those who teach that the pasuk is talking about the simcha of lulav. Is tanye tani b'simchas shlomim akasu medaber. And there are others who teach that the pasuk is talking about shlamim, talking about the korban of shlamim. This is what I mentioned before, that it's fascinating that there is a machlokes tanoim whether to interpret usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim as referring to lulav or to shlamim. Wow. That's interesting. That you could derive either one from the pasuk. That's another indication of some connection between lulav and korban. The fact that the same phrase could be interpreted to mean either one. Okay, but either way, the Yerushalmi clearly says that Usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim refers to the mitzvah to take the lulav in the mikdash for 7 days. Moshe. There's no mitzvah d'oraisa now in a year where we don't take it on the first day. There's no mitzvah d'oraisa. Yeah. You know, same thing with the way what we had with the shofar, right? That we didn't blow shofar on the real day of Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Gzeir d'rabba. Okay. So why am I quoting this? The fact that there's a mitzvah of lulav in the Mikdash and in the Medina. So this is a much larger topic, okay? But I do want to just make the following point, okay? Rav Yeruchem Fishel Perla, in his commentary, I've quoted it, I think, before in Shir, he has a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sajagon. So Rav Yeruchem Fishel Perla, this is not on the Makor sheet, I'm saying it outside. He asks a very basic question. He notices that almost all of the Monei HaMitzvos, those who count the Taryag Mitzvos, they count the mitzvah of Lulav as one mitzvah, even though the mitzvah applies only for one day in the whole world, and it applies for seven in the Mikdash. Nonetheless, they count it only as one mitzvah. And he's bothered that it seems like you should count it as two mitzvos. For a while, he discusses the question, let's say someone took Lulav outside of the Mikdash on day one. Would they be obligated to go to the Mikdash and take it again? It's an interesting question. Intriguing question. Right? How much are these one mitzvah and how much are these two mitzvahs? How much is it that there's one mitzvah to take Lulav and that mitzvah applies everywhere for the first day and then it gets extended for the rest of the Yontif in the Mikdash? And how much are these really just two mitzvahs? There's one mitzvah to take the Lulav in the Medina, and there's one mitzvah to take the Lulav for 7 days in the Mikdash. Different ways to perceive or to interpret the relationship between these two parts of mitzvahs Lulav. Nonetheless, Rav Yeruchem Fishel Perla notes that according to most of the Monei HaMitzvos, we count these only as one mitzvah. And the Rambam, in sources 18, 19, and 20, does something fascinating. Not only does the Rambam count it as one mitzvah, but he describes the mitzvah almost as if the primary component of the mitzvah is the Mikdash. Look, for example, at source number 18. V'amitzvah kuf samichtes, hi shitzivanu bito lulo v'lismach bo lifnei Hashem shev as yamin. V'u amar yisbarach u'kachtam lochem ha'yomarishan v'chulei. And then he says, "V'sham is bayer she'in chovas mitzvah zel shivas yamim ela b'mikdash." Ulam b'sharatzo som rishon levadu shachayavin b'mina Torah. The Rambam begins just by saying that there's a mitzvah to take lulav for 7 days, and you should know that mitzvah is in the mikdash. Ah, when it comes to other lands, other territories, okay, so it's for one day. Rav Rosenzweig pointed out in source number 19 in the Rambam's introduction to Hilchos Lulav. He counts only the mitzvah to take lulav in the mikdash. Lito lulav b'mikdash kol shivas ha'meachag. He doesn't even mention there that you're supposed to take it in other places on the first day. So this is really fascinating that the Rambam seems to view the mitzvah of the mikdash as the primary element of the mitzvah of lulav. And if that's the case, just to make a very, very long argument a short one, maybe what the Rambam has in mind is that at its core, at its essence, the mitzvah of lulav is really a mikdash-oriented mitzvah that spills over into other places for one day. In other words, on the first day of Sukkot, we do a mikdash type of activity everywhere. And that very much coheres with what we've seen so far, no? Lulav is like a korban. It's balaratzos, Brian. It's treated like a korban. Mitzvah baba aveira. Isuchag babusevar karnos hamizbeach. Perhaps the pshat in the Rambam is that, yeah, lulav is really like a korban. It belongs in the mikdash. That's why the mikdash is the primary component here. And on the first day, what we do is take a mikdash activity and we do it in gevulin. Now, if that's the case, then what emerges is that the mitzvah of lulav is really like a remnant of the mikdash. It's ke'en, a korban, it's akin to a korban, But it's the type of Kain Korban that everyone does, even outside of the Mikdash. It brings Mikdash into life everywhere. Yes, Moshe. Okay, so that's a very good question. Obviously, we would have to do we'd have to deal with other details of the mitzvah of lulav more so. Suffice it to say for now that lulav accomplishes some of the things that korbanos accomplish. For example, the na'anuim that are involved with lulav are balirazos. I saw quoted in one of my rabbeim quoted, I forgot from who, but that the Gemara in Tainus says that the purpose of the lulav is to be meratzeh Hashem for the rainy season. Right, that we bring products of agriculture that depend on rain, and we ask Hashem basically with those products, to sustain us with another rainy season. And the Gemara in Tainus actually uses the terminology laratzos. In addition to that, it's also the dalet minim are meant to be mishabeach. That's why we combine them with halel, right? It's not just stam that that we take lulav with halel. According to some, that's really like the ikar time for the mitzvah, because the whole purpose of dalet minim is to be mishabeach, and that's something that some of the korbanos at least have their purpose to do. For example, the korban shlamin, which by the way is the other korban that the Yerushalmi considers could be derived from usmachtem fnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yamim. A korban shlamin is often brought as a means of being mishabeach Hashem. So there are elements of the mitzvah of lulav that do make it comparable to the mitzvah of shalom. Is that a sufficient answer for now? Okay. Good. So everybody with me so far in terms of the evidence about lulav and what we're trying to draw out about it? Thumbs up? Okay. So to wrap up, that's lulav, okay? Remember, we began by asking about the intersection between lulav and sukkah. So now let's just turn to sukkah just for a very, very, very few, just a couple of minutes, okay? A short few moments. So we discussed already on Monday night at length the isser of atzei sukkah and the fact that the sukkah, according to some Rishonim, the Rashba in particular, is really compared to a chagiga. That it has kedushas haguf, just like a korban, right? So the same way that we compare lulav to a korban, there are sources that compare sukkah to a korban as well. That it has a similar type of kedusha. In addition to that, we find other sources that emphasize the kedusha of sukkah. Rav Rosenzweig noted that the Gemara in Sukkah, Dalet Amid Beis, derives some of the measurements of sukkah from objects in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, the height of the sukkah is derived from the height of the Aron Kodesh. In addition to that, we find in later sources, some Kabbalistic sources, some even quoted in the Mishnah Brura, that the sukkah is meant to be treated like a Makom Kadosh. That's why the Mishnah Brura quotes from the Shla that one should be careful, really one should do his best not to speak to Divrei Chol in the sukkah. That you should really be speaking divrei Torah, divrei kedusha in the sukkah. That's really what the sukkah is meant for. It doesn't mean that if you don't have that you have to be silent. Mm-hmm. But again, you should try your best to treat the makom hasukkah as a makom kadosh. There are certain sources that in arel, someone who lacks a bris milah should not be brought into the sukkah. Fascinating, because the sukkah, again, and by the way, that's a very similar din to the Makom HaMikdash. There's a prohibition for an arel to enter the azara, to enter the courtyard around the Beis HaMikdash. So again, we're treating the sukkah like a Makom Kadosh. And there's lots of evidence for this. I just rattled off a couple of sources, right? The Isser of Atzei Sukkah in terms of the Korban Chagiga, the comparison, deriving the measurements from certain objects used in the Mikdash, treating the sukkah as a Makom Kadosh in terms of our Dibur and in terms of our behavior, who can enter the sukkah. There are lots of Makoros in terms of this. And if that's the case, so then we see that not only is lulav compared to a korban and is a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, but sukkah as well, in some respects, is treated like you know, a Ke'in Mikdash, that it's compared to a Chagiga, and it has, at least in later sources, some of the elements of the Kedusha of a Mikdash. Okay? Now, if this is the case, so then we can come back to our original question. We asked, why is it that there's an intersection between Sukkah and Lulav? Why is it that according to some, you should dafka shake the Lulav in the Sukkah? Why is it that the Sukkah has to be made out of the Minim of Lulav? Why is it that maybe we would extend the Kedusha of Sukkah that triggers an Isser of Hana'ah only to the Dalet Minim and not to other mitzvos? Perhaps the idea is, and this is one possible approach, I think there's another possible approach I don't think we're going to have time to get to, but perhaps the idea is that Sukkah and Lulav represent, both in their own ways, part of the central theme of the Chag of Sukkot. They both reflect that Sukkot is about bringing the Mikdash to our personal residence. After having gone through the transition and the journey of Rosh Hashanah through Aseres Yemei Teshuva all the way to Yom Kippur, and we had a day in which we focused entirely on the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, and we did that Avoda in pristine fashion, the Kohen Gadol, the main player of the Beis HaMikdash, with the rest of Klal Yisrael to witness it. And we focused on that Makom HaMikdash as the place in which we rededicated ourselves to Avodas Hashem. So then 5 days later, when we come to Chag HaSukkos, and we have really fulfilled the mission of tshuva, and we've really recommitted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all ways, and we've focused on Kulo LaHashem of Yom Kippur, so then we can bring that Kedusha into our personal residence. And we can enjoy the Hashgacha and the protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Sukkah represents in our personal in our personal lives, not only in the Beis HaMikdash, but also in our bayis, in our dira, because of that relationship that we accomplished on Yom Kippur. And the Sukkah being the korban that's akin to the avoda in the Mikdash, and the Sukkah that's compared to the Makom HaMikdash. So we have the Makom and that which we do in the Mikdash, and we combine those two together to really entrench and really implant the theme of bringing the Mikdash into Gvulin on the Yontif of Sukkot. And then eventually, on Shmini Atzeres, when we take down the Sukkah, so then that is when we are prepared to ultimately bring that Kedusha that we have achieved and that we have that we've really readied ourselves for. That's when we can bring that Kedusha into our actual house and it will stay there for the rest of the year. Perhaps that's the idea that lies behind the connection between Sukkah and Lulav, the way that we bring the Mikdash into Gvulin during this 7-day time period. Okay, so I wish everybody a great rest of the Chag, looking forward to continuing next week with our regular Limud. Shkoyach, everybody.